From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and you are listening to America's most listened to late night talk show, Coast to Coast AM. Top of the hour, next hour, a glimpse of some haunted sights with parapsychological investigator Michael Corey. Stand by for that one. And in a moment this hour as well, Stephen Quayle will join us as we try to unravel this very mysterious puzzle of the dying elk in Wyoming. Just what is causing all that? And of course, right now in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, firefighters there will be moving to a new station next month. But in the process, they may leave behind, believe it or not, a ghost. The headline in a Fort Lauderdale Daily News, December 27th, 1940, read that a local fireman was electrocuted during a storm. His name is Robert L. Knight, 28 years old, and he died. Now, Stephen McInerney is the Operations Division Chief for the Fort Lauderdale, Florida Fire Department. After numerous complaints from firefighters about frightening, spooky events happening at the old firehouse, he set out to find out exactly what is going on. And for a moment, we're going to talk with Stephen about what might be going on there in Fort Lauderdale. Stephen, how are you? Thanks for joining us at this late notice. Appreciate it.
Sure, no problem.
What's happening there at the firehouse anyway?
Well, we have station bids, and they take place in January, and so we had a bunch of new people that got assigned to this Fire Station 8. It was put online in 1927. And so when the personnel got assigned over there, they started having sightings and reporting strange occurrences. And so it kind of trickled up, and it came up to my level, and I started investigating. I was quite shocked after I spoke to numerous people that they all had sightings, and it was something that the firefighters weren't really talking about mm-hmm. too much. You know, it was kind of low key, but we've definitely come to the conclusion that there's something happening there. Not quite sure, but they've seen images, they've seen shadows, doors opening and closing by themselves, light switches being turned off. This is a very busy fire station. They do over 8,000 runs, and so they would go out maybe 4, 5, 6 times after midnight. Each time they go into the engine room, they'd find a light switch in the off position. They'd have to manually turn it back on. They see an image of an adult male looking in the window. They run into the engine room, believing somebody may have broken in, don't find anyone, come in, sit back down. And again, they see the image of a male with his hands cupped to his face looking into this day room, TV room. So kind of spooky. In fact, they they actually covered the window up, probably more so that they wouldn't have to deal with it, at least to see it looking in.
Chief, tell us a little bit about the firefighter who died in 1940.
Yeah, as you outlined, it was Robert Leland Knight. He was 28 years old, and he was only on the job for 11 days when they responded to a structural fire. It was driving rain and wind. It was a freak winter storm with a lot of rain. And apparently, from what I've been able to gather, is that he was a big fellow. He was actually a Golden Gloves boxer, and he had come to Fort Lauderdale as a swimming champion, and he was a city lifeguard. And then he became a firefighter. But unfortunately, they didn't have a pair of boots that would fit him. He had big feet. The boots were on order. So when the alarm came in, he jumped on the truck with regular shoes on.
Oh, yeah.
And when he responded to the fire, he stepped off the tailboard of the truck into water that had pooled and didn't see power lines that had come down. And he was electrocuted. Another firefighter was on the truck, Homer Edenfield, had his rubber boots on, exited the truck in an attempt to rescue Knight. He, too, was electrocuted but survived, and that's a tragic story with Knight. He was engaged to be married, and his body was returned to Grand Rapids, and he was buried in Grand Rapids. So 11 days on the job, and that occurred on December 27th, 1940.
Now, why do some firefighters at the Fort Lauderdale station now think that this ghostly figure might be him?
Well, when we did some check-in, I was really surprised. I had worked there myself as a firefighter, and I never had seen anything. I'd been there for about 5 years back in the early 80s. But when I started checking, I was really surprised to find out that this had been going on for quite a long time, but in periods that it would come and go. So we're in a really active period now that started probably around November and has accelerated, perhaps because we are moving. After 77 years, we're moving to a new firehouse. We're combining two of our busiest into one big house. But firefighters that were on the job back in the 60s had relayed the message to firefighters in that time: if you happen to see a ghost, just say hello, Bobby, and he won't bother you. So the more that we investigate, the more that we find out that this has been going on for a very, very long time.
Has anybody been able to catch him on film or video or anything like that?
We're just kind of getting into that now with the Sun Sentinel story written by Brittany Wallman last week.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting a lot more exposure and interest in trying to find out exactly what's going on. But we have several firefighters that said they've seen very clear, distinguishable characteristics: facial expression, mustache, broad shoulders. And so we got the picture, and firefighters have said this is the guy that we're seeing in the firehouse, which is kind of eerie.
Yeah.
But it kind of makes sense in everything that happened.
Do you all leave the old station with mixed feelings, or you're pretty happy that you're going to get away from perhaps the ghost of Robert Knight?
Well, the ghost has been friendly. It really hasn't impaired or caused any problems, other than, you know, firefighters don't stay up alone. They're a little bit creeped out about the whole thing, especially with the stepped up activity. But it's really a neat firehouse that was built by a famous architect in 1927, and but it's just kind of we've outgrown the usefulness of a small station.
You all might find, Chief, that you might end up missing him once you're in the new place.
But it'll be a story that'll live on forever.
No doubt. Chief, thanks. I appreciate you staying up late to chat with us on Coast to Coast tonight.
Sure. Thank
appreciate
you very much.
It. That's Chief Stephen McInerney from the Fort Lauderdale Fire Department. You heard it. They believe they have a ghost, possibly, of a firefighter who died in 1940, who was electrocuted, and he just seems to just hang around the old firehouse. In a moment, our guest will be Stephen Quayle. We're going to talk about this very perplexing story of why close to 300 elk have died in Wyoming under very mysterious circumstances. People really don't know exactly what has caused this. Investigator and Coast to Coast regular Stephen Quayle, StephenQuayle.com is his website, has been following the story, as we all have, about the very strange, baffling deaths of close to 300 elk in Wyoming. It's been happening since February, and as of just a few days ago, 9 more elk found dead. It just baffles everyone. Stephen, thanks for coming on Coast to Coast with another one of these perplexing stories, isn't it?
Well, this is an incredible story, George, because when I first heard of it, I thought immediately of the old George C. Scott movie called Rage. Do you remember that?
Yes, I sure do.
And what's interesting and very perplexing at the same time is that they've run tests on the dead elk for chronic wasting disease and any type of trace mineral poisoning. And what most people don't understand, elk are incredibly hardy. You know, I mean, in Wyoming, you've got 30, 40 below winters where the elk are normally in their feeding realm during the winter, and we've got a situation now with a very unusual clustering of deaths, and I believe that this is going to draw attention to the fact that some type of a chemical agent is responsible. And I say that for a couple reasons. When you're dealing with nerve agents, or what some people will call organophosphate poisoning, you can always pretty much tell by the symptoms that either the animals or the humans are manifesting that, quite candidly, this is something that is an answer that no one's wanting to touch because of the implications or the ramifications of it. In other words, if this is a test of some kind or an experiment that went wrong, then people would automatically have to ask the question, why are people walking on pins and needles? Now, I just got off the phone after you called me and talked to some people I know in Wyoming, and they're making some pretty amazing claims, and coming from both active duty military and non-active duty military, that the whole issue of the elk is directly related to some type of an experiment that went wrong, very, very wrong.
Oh, really?
Now, yes, sir.
Tell me a little bit about that, Stephen. We've had reports that possibly they might have perished because of gases that might be emitting near Yellowstone, possible, but really nobody has found the cause, or at least has told us what the cause might be. But tell us about this theory now.
Well, first of all, let me deal with the Yellowstone issue, because when you're talking about where these elk are in Rawlings, Wyoming, you're talking about a major distance from Yellowstone Park. I am Bozeman, Montana. I'm about 70 miles north of Yellowstone Park, but the gases that are being emitted in Yellowstone almost continually are sulfur dioxide, so we don't have to worry about that, and that could pretty much be ruled out by just the proximity. Then the other issue that I'm sure you've heard is people are saying that, well, it's there are earthquakes that aren't being reported, so something's escaping. Not true either. The point that it has to be made is this, is that a normal toxicology report or a forensic exam of the blood of these animals would definitely show the trace elements that are organophosphates. You know, we talk about those are nerve agents. And the nerve agents, George, there's over 2,000 different derivations of the typical, what would have been called the Nazi chemical agents that were designed during World War II and after World War II. And some of the better known ones that are public are malathion. Malathion was an insecticide that was an offshoot from the Nazi chemical weapons development program. But if you articulate or manipulate malathion by raising the temperature, you get different and more potent versions of the nerve agent. We're talking things like sarin, tabun, the very things that our military is trained to deal with. So based on the information that I'm getting and based on my response to following this stuff now for about 20 years, not dead elk, but the whole relevance of chemical weapons in the society at large, it appears that these elk are absolutely exhibiting the behavior and the symptoms of being exposed to what would be called a nerve agent.
Mm, because they have ruled out viral, they've ruled out many toxic metals, they've ruled out bacteriological, but nobody has said anything yet about chemicals, so that that might be tops on the list here, Stephen.
Right, and just so you know, that less than an hour ago, I talked to someone in that area who had just gotten off the phone with the Fish and Game, and he said, off the record, he said, we're looking at that really closely. Because, again, the ramifications are so overwhelming, George. You know, number one, who would, if it is found to be a nerve agent, which I believe it is, okay, and I'll just go on the record as usual, and then the question is, how did that many elk get exposed to it, and what was the purpose of it? And see, I can't answer the purpose yet outside of just a test. But again, I got to share with you, and if most of your listeners have never seen the movie Rage with George C. Scott, I'd recommend they go and rent it, because again, it's such a parallel type situation. The only difference is there have been no human deaths attributed to it.
Well, I tell you, your website, of course, stevecoyle.com, and Linda Moulton Howe's website, Steve, at earthfiles.com, has a pretty comprehensive story about this indeed as well. One of the things that I find very fascinating about this is those veterinarians who are in the area trying to tend to the elk find them to be petrified of human beings, they say, and then when they approach the elk, they can't run away. They're just too weak. Some of them can't even stand up, and these are the few that they find alive. They're beginning to think that something has hit the central nervous system.
Absolutely, and when you're dealing with a CNS-type situation, central nervous situation, then your first, you don't have to be Sherlock Holmes, George, to go for this. The first thing has got to be, okay, what would attack the central nervous system? Because something's interfering with the neurotransmitters that are sending the signals through the elk's neurological system, and it's preventing the muscles from reacting. And a good test for this would be, too, to introduce atropine or something that would break the activity, mm-hmm. just like the U.S. Armed Services carry, antidotes for nerve agents. That would be a good start to, that would be what I would call a quick and dirty expedient field test. And I think that, again, based on my conversation after you called me, I can tell you this, that there are a lot of people in the game and fish in Wyoming and other government agencies that are very concerned about this. And again, the situation is when you're dealing with this type of obvious, unusual anomaly, you can only look so many directions before you're left. When you've ruled out everything else, you come to the conclusion that it has to be some form of a neurological toxin.
Now, they do call it a very bizarre paralysis. Now, why not deer? Why not bears? Doesn't seem that any other animals, at least that it's been reported, have been affected, just elk. Why?
Well, because I would say this, that if it were some type of a test, obviously you would have your target or your group of animals, you would be selecting them, and then however you would disperse the chemical, you could control that. And so this is not basically something that is transmissible from one elk to another, because again, you're talking about a group, if you will, a herd of animals that are experiencing almost all the identical symptoms, and with some dying later. Now that can be accounted for too through the different exposures. You know, if let's say the first batch of elk got exposed to a lethal dose, meaning so many parts per million of the nerve agent, and then the later elk only got traces of it, well, obviously they would be showing the basic symptoms, but they wouldn't be, you know, to the point where they'd have to be euthanized on the spot. And so we're seeing, I would say this, so many indicators of a chemical agent or a form of, or multiple chemical agents, that again, I can only say that based on everything that I'm getting, I'm being told, that I'm putting the facts together, it appears that no one wants to touch that subject. And you know, I'm grateful that you're touching it tonight.
I saw a story 6 months ago, Stephen, that said that our government was working on some kind of a biological / chemical agent that had the ability to pick and choose the species it would attack, and also could lie dormant for 10, 20, 30 years and at any beck and moment decide to do what it was supposed to do. And I find this to be fascinating in that, could it be that they are testing elk? Maybe they have the exact DNA of what they want the elk to be in terms of its genetic map, and they say, okay, we want this substance to attack elk, and we know exactly what elk is. We've now trained this biological chemical to do that, and we let it go, and we watch it happen, and indeed it is happening.
Well, first of all, what I'd have to have, and obviously all the scientists listening to the show tonight, they'd have to have DNA to look for any type of mutagenic properties or any type of byproducts of a genetically altered elk specific pathogen. But they would also that's in the biological realm. And by the way, that is true. There are weapons, and you and I've talked about this at length on Coast, where you've got race specific weapons now, you've got blood type specific weapons. I'm talking biological. You can basically identify any genetic marker and create in the laboratory a biological weapon. Again, your suggestion is a good one. In other words, is this, and there's only two possibilities, and one of them is it's a genetic altered virus that has been designed to only go after the elk, which I don't believe, okay, but that's a good suggestion, or it's a chemical, and that chemical would have to either be sprayed or somehow delivered to the elk herd. And again, if you understand that elk typically, especially when it's cold and when they're going in their standard patterns of migration and their habitual response to specific times of year in specific areas, then it would be very easy to cordon off, a test group of elk and introduce a chemical agent into them also.
Stephen, stay with us. I'd like you to take phone calls from Coast listeners. Somebody might be able to add a little bit more to this conversation. A fast blast from Vicky, by the way, out of Nebraska, simply says that it's mercury poisoning from Yellowstone. It's seeped into the water. Well, I don't think that's the case because, again, we're just talking about the elk dying. There are no other reports of other animals out there, and there are many dying. It's just the elk. Whatever it is, it's targeted just these kinds of animals. I'm George Norrie. We'll be back in a moment with Stephen Quayle and your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM.
The After Dark newsletter is $39.95. Subscribe now and get your free CD of Art Bell and Malachi Martin. Call now 1-888-727-5505. George Norrie, call the wildcard line at area code 818-501-4109. The first-time caller line is area code 818-501-4721. To talk with George toll-free from east of the Rockies, call 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, toll-free at 1-800-618-8255. International callers may reach George Norrie by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From the City of Angels, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Well, at the top of the hour, we're going to talk about some haunted houses with investigator Michael Corey. It'll be just a few moments on Coast to Coast AM. A few more weeks to go, and the free CD offer, Art Bell's interview with the late Father Malachi Martin, will be over. And this CD, collector's item number one, will not be reproduced again. You get it for free when you order an After Dark subscription. A couple ways you can do that. One is toll-free, right on the phone, 24 hours a day, 1-888-727-5505. 1-888-727-5505. The other way, safe and secure, right off the coasttocoastam.com website. Just a moment, we'll be back with Stephen Quayle and your phone calls with the mystery of the dead elk. Stephen Quayle, our guest, and your phone calls this hour. Stephen, chemtrails, what are the possibility? I get reports that they see a lot of strange things in the skies of Wyoming.
Well, first of all, you know, chemtrails are a whole another issue, but if we're talking about, may I address the mercury issue?
Yes.
They've already done the autopsies and the necropsies, the brain autopsies to look for heavy metals, and there is no mercury showing up, and mercury poisoning, although it does affect the neurotransmitters, it's totally different, and so that has to be ruled out. If you look at a square, George, Yellowstone Park is up at the very top, would be the northwest corner of Wyoming, and where this is happening is basically in the south-central part, at least 250 miles away, so that's definitely ruled out. chemtrails in this case, you brought it up so concisely. We're only talking about one specific group of animals, and that's the elk. So again, that leads us to believe that someone is targeting a specific group of animals to see what effect whatever agents are using are having on them.
All right, let's go to the phones. Wildcard Line, welcome to Coast to Coast. You are on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call tonight, George.
My pleasure, sir. Go ahead.
I will make this comment very quick. I concur with Stephen Quayle on the location of the dead elk, unfortunately. I live in Wyoming and am very concerned about what's going on. But I want to mention the fact that you mentioned there was 10,000 birds that dropped out of the sky in China, mm-hmm. and this was all about the same time.
Well, that's true. That's a good point. Now, you know, it's on the other side of the world in a different species altogether, but we did have another bizarre case there. And, Stephen, they have yet to discover what caused those birds to fall from the sky.
Well, absolutely. And, again, one of the things that I'm sure you've addressed before is when the high-energy physics like HARP and some of the ionospheric heating technology goes into place, that can be so specifically targeted that birds, especially that fly into that electromagnetic grid, are known to, no pun intended, but drop like flies. So, and the situation with the chemtrail spraying is different parts of the world are getting different chemical compounds sprayed over them. So, again, you can target birds, you can target deer, elk, whatever you want to target, you can target genetically. But again, what we're dealing with in the elk is more chemical, and every single symptom that is being broadcast in the press, and even, let's say, this covered up behind the press, points to a specific group of chemicals, which are organophosphates, which are nerve agents, and someone is chosen the elk to experiment on.
Is it us or is it them, Stephen?
Well, now that's a good point, and here's an issue that I think let's say that we've gotten wind of a specific nerve agent that's been introduced in the country, and let's say we've even got some of it, and it's not ours, it could be theirs, meaning whatever group has got it in possession. Remember, there's 2,000 different variations on nerve agents, and so they could have tested it and meant to test it on, let's say, several, and something went awry for whatever reasons. And the point is that it spread that way. Also, people have got to realize that Wyoming and Nevada are the two states with the most secret bases in the world. So, you know, this is not out of the question to when we're talking about experimentation and testing. And I would say that's probably the other plausible answer for this.
And I'm going to predict that this eventually will become a major story with the mainstream media, Stephen, though it has not yet. It will.
It will, and I got to tell you something. Isn't it amazing that they won't touch certain stories, and then you take them on, or Art takes them on, and then lo and behold, George, I can't tell you how many times after you and I do shows together that I get called by the big guys. Okay, when I say the big guys, Fox, CBS, those
right.
guys, and you know what they tell me? The directors or news directors, they say we would love to take this stuff on, and they say we listen to Coast to find out what's really going on, and that truly happens. So I'm just saying I agree with you, especially, can you imagine the fallout of the whole idea that an indigenous elk herd is being experimented on? And then the questions are, by who and with what?
West of the Rockies, you are on Coast to Coast with Stephen Quayle. Hi there.
Hello. I'm Jerry, and I live in Casper, Wyoming, which is just north of where all this is happening. And I wanted to try to give you maybe a the local perspective
sure.
of everything going on here.
Go ahead, Jerry.
For one, I'm glad I just heard about him drawing a link between chemtrails. I can tell you, here in Casper, Wyoming, I don't think we're on any major flight paths. And, for example, just a week ago, within, I'd say, 15 degrees of arc up on the south sky from here in Casper, I saw 5 aircraft at once.
With a lot of chemtrail activity?
Yes.
Strange.
See, I work at night. One morning I left work, and it almost looked like somebody was playing tic-tac-toe in the air.
Yeah, and that's exactly the pattern that is up in the sky.
Yes, it was a very pronounced grid with actually diagonals going across it. So,
Stephen, I mean, a little too early to make a little hypothesis about this, but here's a witness who lives in the area, and he sees this.
Well, I think, George, again, the thing that we've got to deal with, though, is the fact that if it were chemtrails, and please, we can go into hours of what's in chemtrails and why it's so deadly and sinister, but the point is that the fact that it's not all the elk over the area that's been sprayed, and by the way, every state in the union is being sprayed, in intense grids and patterns, and the X's that people see in the sky are for the satellites to monitor the dispersal of the spray. But again, we're only talking about elk. We're talking about 300. We're not talking about the deer. We're not talking about anything else, no other mammals or anything. We're talking specifically about elk. So that means it has to be a specific toxin and not a general toxin. For instance, if we were talking about all the elk where the spraying pattern for the chemtrails are dead, then we could say, hey, they sprayed them, the chemtrails, and they have an elk-specific whatever. But the point is that it is too exclusive and too specific, I think, to incorporate that as a vector for the very situation we're talking about, 300 dead elk in a very limited area.
Thanks for that call, Jerry. First-time caller line, your turn. You're on with Stephen Quayle. Hi there.
Hi, gentlemen. Appreciate you taking my call.
Sure thing.
To give you some idea on my background, I worked at USAMRID at Fort Detrick, Maryland in 1992 to 1993 in the bacteriology section. I'm not going to try to overblow my role there. It was pretty minor. But as far as the bio and chem aspects of the elk dying, I've got some real doubts. As far as deployment of any sort of agent, be it chemical or biological, on any sort of a test basis, I seriously doubt that it would happen during wintertime because winter and a cold temperatures are one of those things that attenuate.
Well, but they had a very mild winter this year, they said, out that way.
And also on a chemical agent, that would not be as true as it would be in a viral or a bacterial. Here's the deal. The people that are talking to me from active duty military to scientists, what I would call background scientists who don't want their names known. And there's some concern there, and I don't want to diminish your experience at Fort Detrick, but I also, this is a different time, almost 12 years later. And again, what George is suggesting is that, and I guess he brought it up, and I'm trying to attenuate it, that if there are specific known nerve agents or chemical weapons that might be in the possession of whoever that they want to test, initially you could test it. Look, all you need is a helicopter and some kind of a dispersal a system to test it, and you can see the response of, quote, large mammals to it. So the point is that, you're obviously, I don't believe it's viral. I don't believe it's bacterial. They've already checked for all the known stuff. And so that only leaves one thing, and in my opinion, it is chemical.
And now, is it your theory then that that it's the United States military doing this, or it's a foreign power doing it?
Well, I would say this, that the testing, if it was being tested as an agent that might be used against us, then it would have to be the U.S. military. Remember this, that sarin nerve gas ended up in the hands of the Aum Shinrikyo cult in Japan, and at that point, the powers that be, even the global think tank, said that, this is just too far out to even believe, and sure enough, they came to the conclusion that even though they would have liked to have kept the genie in the bottle intellectually, the time comes when the genie's out of the bottle. And I'm saying I believe this is a case where the genie's out of the bottle.
Wild card line, your turn. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hey, George. How you doing? How you doing, Stephen?
Good, sir.
It's Rob heading up north in Delaware, heading toward Jersey. And, Stephen, I love listening to you. Sometimes I agree with you. This time I got a couple of hard questions for you. If you're suggesting this is U.S. government, first of all,
well, no, he's
elk,
not sure of that yet.
Yeah, I'm not saying that. I'm saying somebody is testing it.
Well, exactly, and if you are suggesting it's the U.S. government, 300 elk. Now, obviously, if someone sprayed 300 elk, you don't see 300 elk running together.
I mean, I just,
you're talking
I just,
about.
I disagree with you. I live in Bozeman, Montana, and I can take you any place within 50 miles of here, and at certain times, you'll see anywhere from 50 to hundreds of elk together. So,
well,
yeah, I'm just telling you, I live in elk country. I can go any place out of my front or back door, and within 20 or 30 miles, be in elk herds of that size.
Well, okay, I'll go with you on that. However, if you're going to suggest that it's the U.S. government, you have private people who are doing autopsies on this, and it would seem to me that if it was this secretive, they might want to try and cover it up. I mean, at least take one of these herds, round them up, and keep it out of the public eye with all these secret bases. They could very easily do that, fan them up, and test them without the public knowing.
Well, if they know that the private doctors and vets in the area will never find out what caused this, they probably wouldn't have anything to worry about on that front.
Well, yeah, that's true. However, it's just one of those. I'm looking at the Occam's razor type of thing, as I always do, George, and it's a very big mystery, and it seems like by doing it the way they're doing it, if they are, it would just bring up so many questions that, like you said, the mainstream media is going to jump on this with a huge story. Like, this is not a small story. This is a huge thing, especially with bad cow going around and in these animals. And, you know, these people, whoever are doing this, if it is the government, shadow government, whatever, these people are going to be going.
Well, and here's another thing, and thanks for your call. Here's another thing, Steve, that we cannot rule out. You know, when we think of terrorism, we think of international terrorism. I mean, what are the possibilities of domestic terrorists who might have come across biologicals or chemicals, purchased it from someone abroad, and they generally might live out in a region like that is somewhat rural, and they're testing this first?
Well, I would say this, that in generally, unless they've got a real good background in chemical CBW, chemical biological warfare background, chances are we would have indications of people, and there may be people who have been checked into different hospitals and stuff, because, again, when you're dealing with this kind of stuff, you got to deal with a fair level of sophistication. But, again, you can say this, whether it's domestic, whether it's international, or whether it's a testing of something that's in this country, tests go wrong. Listen, they go wrong all the time. And for those that don't believe that, we've got a history in the United States of testing military and biological and chemical weapons, they just have basically got to go and look at the history of what was done even during the Cold War, when incredible amounts of radiation was released on the West Coast and traveled pretty much throughout the country in different areas.
Stephen, as you know, money can buy sophistication. Money can buy brain power. Look what they did with the Pakistani father of its nuclear program.
Exactly.
You know, money bought that guy. And so that, to me, is entirely possible, that any kind of special interest group that has the right amount of cash somewhere can get what they want. Add this in conjunction with a story that you and I have been following for the last year or so, and that's the very strange deaths of microbiologists in this country and around the world. As a matter of fact, I hope you got an email from someone who emailed me the last time you and I talked about the dead microbiologists.
Yes,
because he said, and I'm going to paraphrase an email that I got from his friend, and it said, when he first heard you, George, and Stephen Quayle talking about the strange deaths of microbiologists, he laughed about it because his son was one, and he said this was just preposterous. His son died 2 days later after we talked about strange deaths of microbiologists. That guy isn't laughing anymore.
Oh, I'm sorry for his loss, and it breaks my heart to hear that. You know, this is something that people have got to understand again.
And by the way, that's not me saying that guy's not laughing anymore. That's his friend is saying that.
Oh, I understand.
About his buddy.
Tragedy, but again, I can only tell you this, that you also got the copy of the email I received by a very, very famous scientist who was talking about his colleagues being murdered, and he happens to be the inventor of stealth technology. Remember when I sent you that?
Mm-hmm.
So, I think it's important for the Coast listeners to understand that some of the world's most prominent and these guys are the who's who in the greatest scientific achievements have been in contact with us and said, we know what's happening to our colleagues, Steve. And for the record, I sent that to George, and he's familiar with who the person is. Very, very famous.
Steve, the clock is going to get us this hour, but it was very important to get you on to talk about this very strange story. I do indeed hope that it's a natural cause of some disease out there affecting these elk, but, you know, you just never know. I mean, these are the words from people who are investigating it. Bizarre paralysis. We don't understand. They are frightened when we approach them, but they can't get up. They can't move. Something is affecting them like this. I mean, it just sounds like something affecting the brain and the nervous system. And what does that? Some kind of chemical or biological.
Absolutely. And I think this is going to be a bigger story, especially when, obviously, you're breaking this aspect of it on your show tonight. And again, the people who make the news, they don't report the news, you know what I'm talking about, the network executives, maybe we can embarrass them into having to deal with the real story once in their lives.
Well, we need a full-scale investigation, and quite honestly, this the herd of the elk that they continue to find paralyzed and dead needs to be taken to Fort Detrick. They need to analyze this in some very sophisticated medical areas, or else they're never going to find out what happened to them.
Well, and let me share this. I think that concurrent with that, it needs to be in the public sector, and there's some very, very intelligent toxicologists out there who need to parallel watch the results of the investigation.
Steve Quayle, stevequayle.com. And if you want a little bit more of this story as well, go to Linda Moulton Howe, who's been doing an investigation as well, earthfiles.com. Stephen, thank you. Appreciate it.
Good night, George.
I'm George Norrie. I'll be back in a moment. Coast to Coast continues worldwide.
Would you pay 15 cents to hear this show in its entirety? That's the daily charge for Streamlink. Sign up at www.coasttocoastam.com.